day, this morning, I'd like to reflect and to begin to introduce this notion of vipassana, insight meditation, in harmony and balance, informed by the samatha, samadhi meditation that we've been cultivating the last few days. Samatha is the word given for the method of calming, the calming meditation. We usually fall under this umbrella of this word samatha, which literally means to still the thinking mind, to gather, as we've been exploring, into this present moment, that which is usually dispersed through the practice of moments of attention. And the last few days we've been cultivating a little bit the skill of the samatha meditation, the samadhi practice, skill of the five jhana factors, as they're traditionally called, the factors that allow for the for a level of calm, a level of absorption, a level of peacefulness or tranquility. Vitaka is bringing a moment of attention to this moment, to breath, to body. The vichara, the ability to receive and stay connected with what we've brought our attention to explore, to adjust the quality of our attention, the quality of our effort, to relax more, to sharpen, be more attentive. Pity, the third factor, which is to begin to notice that as the mind becomes more gathered, as the attention becomes more continual, as the ability to receive the experience of breath and body becomes more full, this pity, this feeling of being filled by, the sense of enjoyment, pleasure that can arise from the samatha meditation, being filled by a sense of tranquility or calm, and then the fourth factor, sukha, which means to ease or to calm the sometimes the pity faculty can get too excited or too bubbly, and so this that subtle equanimity, this ability to even let go at a subtle level of detachment to wanting calm, which keeps us a subtle hesitation to be more peaceful, more easeful, more relaxed. Ekakata means the fifth factor, the unified, all things coming together in this moment, the moment of mindfulness. Moments of presence. So these last few days we've been exploring skill in these five faculties and beginning to have a taste or feeling or a sense of the heart, the mind that's gathered and energized with the breath, the body that's energized with the breath energy. So this practice of samadhi or samatha leads to tranquility, leads to calm. However, it's dependent upon certain factors being in place. And if those factors diminish, then we can easily get disturbed. And so although this calming meditation, this samatha, this samadhi aspect of the path is considered very fundamental and very important to develop skill at, skill over a lifetime, it's also not a complete approach to the liberation of heart. Because it's by its very nature, it's transitory, the fruits are transitory, tranquility is transitory, peacefulness is transitory, and by its very nature, it's dependent upon certain factors being in place that are also transitory, that are also impermanent. The ability to have a controlled environment is often So it depends, allows us to explore this tranquil side of the meditation. The ability to have a certain faculty of will to hold attention. Will is also dependent. Sometimes if one notices, if you're very tired, not very well, the will can, the capacity for will can diminish. It's dependent upon not being disturbed too much. We can easily lose our calm when we're still disturbed. And it's also dependent upon, to a certain extent, suppressing the hindrances. We've been exploring if something arises that feels disturbing to us. We've exploring this viveka of putting down, saying, not now. Putting down for the sake of just feeling this gatheredness. But that's only a temporary measure. And so Ajahn Chah teaches that it's a bit like having a big stone that you put on the grass. You think the grass is not growing because you have the stone repressing the grass. As soon as you remove the stone, then the grass continues to grow. So as soon as the conditions for tranquility are removed, then we find that the hindrances can emerge. Hence the need for to balance, to inform, to have informing our calming meditation, to have wisdom informing it, to have inquiry, to have insight, informing the calm. And so a deeper calm, as Ajahn Chah would say, actually comes from wisdom, not from just the level of control that enables a certain level of tranquility. The wisdom to see what we call disturbance for what it is. And so, by necessity, we need to, at a certain point, include this more investigative, this more reflective type of meditation into our calm, into our tranquility, into our stillness. It's not to abandon the stillness, but to allow the stillness to be a place of stability from which we can then explore. So we never totally put down the skill that we can develop through the jhana factors, the skill of stabilizing the mind and heart, but we don't stop there. The samatha meditations lead, as I mentioned, to this experience of inner well-being, to calm, to tranquility. It's very well developed, very honed. It can lead to what's called the higher knowledges, or intuitive ability to see more deeply into the nature of others' minds or other realms. It's classically, traditionally recorded in the suttas. To know things almost supernaturally. What we might call that, the product or the effect of the of a very, very focused mind. And it's interesting to note that that's often what we might associate with a spiritual attainment. And it can be very impressive to see that, even at the time of the Buddha, the cousin of the Buddha, Devadatta, had enormous capacity for this style of meditation, ability to have psychic powers, enormously impressive as an ascetic, one that was interested in purity tradition, that was able to be very eloquent, was able to have all sorts of knowledge, extra knowledges, but the fundamental work of his heart being purified from ignorance wasn't done. So, in the end, out of the power of jealousy and aversion, he tried to take the life of the Buddha, didn't succeed. but revealed that in fact, however impressive he was on one in just one capacity, the heart wasn't totally purified. The tendencies for aversion and hatred weren't diminished, weren't transformed. So it's important the Buddha pointed in his teaching not as the goal of just becoming super tranquil, super calm, super powerful in these methods of samadhi. That wasn't the goal, but the goal was to purify the heart. And for that we have to know that which diminishes or contracts the feeling of openness, the feeling of the capacity for wisdom. That which hinders or obstructs, we have to first of all get to know the obstructions before they can be transformed, before we can let them go or transcend them or not be bothered by them or know them for what they are. So by implication, this complementary aspect to the calming meditation, the Vipassana meditation, by implication it means to allow ourselves to be disturbed. Disturbance isn't a disturbance, actually. The hindrances aren't hindrances. They are, in fact, those things that inevitably come to awaken us even more, to teach us that there's still things to learn, to know about. So when we can approach it like this, rather than the feeling of when there's a hindrances arise, something going wrong, if there's dullness in the heart or aversion, worry, we can see this is an opportunity for us to sharpen our sword of wisdom, as I think Charles said, sharpen the stone. It's an opportunity for us to, there's things that we need to learn in response to that which we feel is disturbing to us. To mature our full body, our full spiritual body. Not to just stop at having moments of calm, but to really mature our wisdom. So Vipassana, in its more subtle understanding, is not really a technique, and that's why, in some ways, it's harder to get a handle on it, because the mind likes to have a method. It's not really technique orientated, although one can use technique. In its essence, a more reflective type. It's less control, perhaps. It's less use of will to control. It's more allowing. It's sometimes called choiceless awareness. We're allowing ourselves to be with what is, not directing the mind away or the attention away from what's appearing, but we're allowing ourselves to be with what is for the sake of investigation. How is it? What's appeared? What's present for us? So it's using the mind's own capacity for reflection, for wisdom. It's this reflective capacity that has wisdom, intuitive understanding. How is it? We know. Here now is doubt in the mind. I don't know. When we start to talk about the personal practice, the partner, often what will come up is doubt. What should I do? Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I be with the breath? Or should I be with the vision that's arisen? Or should I be with this feeling? Or should I be with this memory? Or should I be with worry? Or what should I do? And so one of the obstructions or hindrances to actually a deeper level of peacefulness is to actually recognize our ability to know the mind when it's in a state of doubt. Usually when doubt arises, we try and solve it. What should I do? Well, do this. Oh, good. And then a minute later we think, but is that the right thing? And do they know what I should do? What's the best technique? What's the best method? What's the best approach? Is this right? Am I doing it right? getting the right result. So this is a vichikicca. Vichikicca in Pali is this word, just the very word sums up this sort of feeling, vichikicca. Like this unsettledness, this unsettledness of the mind. Just trying to find solidity. In the Vipassana, in the inquiry, we can just begin to know this is doubt. This is one of the five classical hindrances. This is the mind in a state of uncertainty. Rather than trying to force an answer, tell me an answer quick. To be able to tolerate the uncertainty so that we can get to know the construct. The construct of the doubting mind. So Vipassana can allow for doubt. In fact, it must allow for doubt. The doubt that doesn't need an answer, a doubt that doesn't need a solution, but can just be known. This is the experience of uncertainty. And it's a very different relationship to that experience when we know it for what it is and when we're caught up in it and trying to find a solution or an answer. There's a lot of doubt in life, a lot of uncertainty. It can really diminish our capacity for well-being. So to be able to know, moments of knowing, this is the mind that doesn't know. Recognizing the other formation of that which is usually called a hindrance, rather than a disturbance, as I was mentioning, rather than something going wrong, to be able to see that actually this is something that we can investigate. So this movement of tanha, tamasava, the word tanha means thirsting. Tamasava means the flood of seeking for sensory fulfillment somehow. This movement of the mind that's looking for something more than what's here. If we're not really conscious of that, then we become very shaped by it. The sense of self, the sense of who we are, is consistently shaped by that feeling of moving into the next thing, looking for the next thing, looking for something, looking for the right sensory impingement, sensory contact. And it becomes quite refined when it's in the field of the so-called world, and that energy is constantly flowing out to sensory objects. More of this, a better that, a better environment, a better place, a nicer something or other. And when we don't have that opportunity, and then it gets transferred into the meditative process, it's this feeling of needing a better state of mind somehow, a calmer state, a more peaceful state. Well, when we believe in that, when we're seduced by that movement, there's a delusion in it, because the delusion is always this feeling that takes us away from being present. It's always being shaped into that movement. It's something more yet to get. Something that's not enough now. So it's very, very seductive, and it's very deluding, and it's very, very much what we feel we are. The sense of self is shaped, and it's always pointing onwards. And so we need to see, we need to be enlightened to that that energy. We need to not to repress it. It's not a bad, we're not putting a value judgment on it. In fact, all of these so-called hindrances, when they become more conscious, when we become more awakened to them, all of them are very close to very positive energies. They can all be transformed. Tanha, when it's unconscious, is this restless, feverish desiring and craving of the mind, wanting, the wanting, Ajahn Chah just called it wanting, the mind wanting something. When it becomes, when we get more of a handle in a more conscious relationship rather than an ignorant relationship, it can become, for example, a quality called chanda, which is enthusiasm, aspiration, it's an energy we need for meditation, for everything in life. It's more the unconscious relate. It's not the energy that's bad. It's the relationship to it that's uninformed, that's compulsive, that's unmindful that we're looking at, not necessarily. The energy is a dharma. It's what it is. It's part of nature. So this tendency for us to move into shape of seeking, and then the opposite, the averse tendencies of mind, ill will, the resistance, feeling of, from the subtlest feeling of not somehow wanting to really be here, not really, often that can be a very pervasive feeling in our life. We're not quite fully here somewhere. We're somewhere a little bit dislocated. Psychological level, it can be this disassociative tendency, dislocated in a very subtle way that permeates the feeling of a self. Maybe underneath that, some anxiety, some fear. It's just the feeling of resistance. Don't quite know even what we're resisting, but it's just the feeling of hardening up. Or plain aversion. And you purify this energy of your will, aversion can become discernment. But unrecognized, it tends to constantly perpetuate into the moments of our experience this feeling of a sort of an, as one of our teachers called it, a souring of the will, ill will, the will that's gone sour, that's not vital. And so when that emerges, we have moments of just recognizing it. We don't have to fix it, we don't have to press it out, we don't have to slam it. But this moment of recognizing, that's the work of Vipassana, recognizing in this moment there's aversion. It's not a personal saving. We don't have to interpret it as a personal description of ourselves. In this moment, we recognize this faculty of vipassana, the faculty of wisdom, recognizes there's resistance and aversion here. And usually when we don't recognize it, there's delusion around it, then we think, well, there's aversion here, I need to go do something else. I need to change this whole room. Don't like the way it is. Should have more cushions, should have more something or other, more colors or more beauty in it. To change my environment somehow. And it's not to say things shouldn't be changed, but sometimes when we're unconsciously propelled by that energy, we're always changing something to alleviate actually what underneath is feeling of aversion. And so in the Vipassana, when that comes up, we can be averse when we're very, very peaceful and very tranquil. And then a thought comes up or a memory comes up. In essence, it's not a problem. In essence, it's the movement. But when there's the problem is often aversion. That's more of a problem. I don't want this. And so being able to recognize tanha, wanting of the mind, the not wanting, the dullness that can arise. We talked about yesterday at the question. Dullness can be very near to calm. Sometimes I'll be very calm and just go dull. It can also be very near to aversion. You don't want to feel anything, so you just go dull. And sometimes we live our life partially numb, not able to fully feel. And so that, if that's our all of these are habits that we will have that will emerge as soon as we make a space. In some of the meditation, we start to make a space. Some of these patterns called latent tendencies, anusaya is the word, like these tendencies of how we feel ourselves will emerge, and so we want to know them. Even if they are disturbances, even if they're uncomfortable, the Vipassana in a way is allowing ourselves to feel uncomfortable, not to be daunted. So we can notice the mind, and when it's in this dull state, it's not trying to then fix it, but to just bring attention, that same quality of attention that we've brought to the breath, the moments of being here, we can just open that attention to include dullness or restlessness. Sometimes it's not dullness, we're just bouncing off the wall. Can't stay another minute. We need to go somewhere. Mind very, very, very agitated. Not able to settle. And again, when that's an unconscious energy that constantly fuels our sense of being, then we can never settle. We sit here for a moment, the mind's already looking for something else. And so this moment of bringing attention to know, just that's all the work that we need to do. It's not to repress them, it's not to figure them out, it's not to resolve it, it's not to give ourselves a psychotherapy session. Why is this here? What happened in my childhood that this energy is like this? When will be the end of it? Why did it happen to me? Whose fault is it? It's just there. Yes, there's a work that we can do to explore those. I'm not saying that those aren't, in some context, important questions. In the meditative context, we're not so concerned with why. Why is it happening to me? We're more concerned with actually just knowing it's like this, in this moment. It's dull, it's restless, it's wanting, it's not wanting, doubting. So in the moments of knowing it's like this, there's wanting in the mind, there's aversion, there's dullness, there's restlessness, there's uncertainty. That's a moment of liberation. It doesn't necessarily mean that that force, that energy just drops away. But there's a different relationship. And then the Vipassana, we can explore. Well, how is it? How is it in the body? Where do I feel that restlessness? Can I actually, rather than just resist what's present, can I actually welcome? Can I actually embrace? Can I actually allow my attention to engage? Can I get a sense of how subtly the feeling of the sense of self, the shape, I become that? How do I become that? As soon as we become the restlessness, become the aversion, then that's just the feeling of samsara, the feeling of unsettledness, of moving on. As soon as we know it, which is as it is, it takes us back into the original heart. That is just knowing, that's just present, vijja, the root vijja, to see, that place of seeing that's constant, And then the movement of the hindrance is their dharmas, their nature, they're not personal possessions, they're not things we have to claim or judge or despise. They're just like this, movement of the heart. And freeing, moments of freedom, freeing our identification. And moments of not necessarily having to be moved along, pushed along by these various hindrances. The Buddha said it's like someone that's been in debt. When we don't really awaken, when we're not very, when we don't really know these forces for what they are, it's like we've been in debt, we're indebted. We're not free yet. And so the Buddha said it's like when moments of being released, knowing it's just like this, wanting the mind, but I am not the wanting, it's just wanting. And the subsiding of these hindrances and the knowing of them, it's like Buddha said, it's like being free from debt. It's like being free from prison. Or free from enslavement. Or another way he talks about it, it's like one's been ill. And one's free from a certain kind of sickness or illness of the heart. Or it's like one's been on a long journey in a desolate territory. And then one arrives at a safe place. One arrives to a place that feels safe, that feels free. And so this safe place is the heart that's knowing in this moment. Knowing the movement of wanting, the movement of aversion, the movement of restlessness, the movement of doubt. And that knowing we don't move, the movement happens, but the heart's not moving, it's just present. It's already free. So to find, to explore today in our practice, as we begin to open the attention a little more, to allow ourselves to be with whatever emerges, to explore this balance between the samatha and the vipassana. Vipassana is not thinking about things. Sometimes when we stop thinking about our life, ourselves, where we're going, what's happening, then we've already lost our base in attention. Sometimes we can find ourselves very, very floaty, very disconnected, disembodied. And so if we find ourselves, you know, we start to explore changing experience of something, feeling tone of aversion. We start to explore that, and then we start to go off into making a whole storyline about why it's there and what's happening to me and where I'm going. Then we might need to come back to the samatha. Oh, I'm off somewhere in Timbuktu. Way. And so then to balance, to realize we can come to this moment, to the breath, to stabilizing our attention moment by moment, taking just one breath at a time. But then if we notice we've become quite gathered, quite peaceful, quite stable, and then someone makes a sound, slams the door, or cuts in line in the food, or a memory comes up, and we find ourselves getting really agitated, and then we try and battle to get back to that peaceful state, then we can actually say, this is how it is now. And then open our awareness, open our attention to gather that in and to explore what's present here. Feeling of agitation. What's connected with it? Maybe I want it to be different. Maybe I there's aversion. I don't want feeling of pain in the knee. I don't want that contact with the door slamming. I don't. So we, rather than gone wrong, when you get disturbed, you can explore it. And moment of insight, it's wanting or not wanting. And the moments of just being able to see that and perhaps let it be, let it go, we arrive back to a more expanded peacefulness that can include movement, that can include disturbing. That actually can not only include but embrace for the sake of exploration. Dzogchen Tsa, our teacher, described like the samatha, the calming meditation. It's like a knife. The calming is like you have a knife and you want to cut through something. You need some strength to the knife, so you need a back to it. You can't just have a blade. So the calming meditation is like the back of the knife. The blade is like the attachment. It's like the seeing what's really precisely what's here now. The two work together. Or he says it's like a candle. It's like the candle is the wax, the shape of the candle is like the samatha. It's the calming, the body, the base, the foundation. So there's no good just building a huge candle. At some point you have to light it. So we have a candle and then we light it, but if you have you're just lighting matches and you have nothing to attach the flame to, then it goes out very easily. You know, so then you need the body, the wax, the fuel. The gathered mind, the mind of attention, the mind that's focused, the gathered, the ability to have samadhi, middle part of the path, the ability to have strength. Attention gives us the capacity for inquiry, for looking into the nature of things. So for each of us, we have to know where we are out of balance. For some of us, we have great samadhi, great gatherings, but we're so frightened of letting go, we never allow, we can become very rigid meditators. Don't disturb them. I remember when my first retreat, I had this notion that meditation was just about stopping everything. And immature understanding of meditation. And I was a student at the time, I went back to the student house I was sharing. And then an ice cream van came. I don't know if you have them here, but they have these. And it was parked outside the house and going on and on and on. And in the end, I found myself racing up for my meditation cushion and saying to the man in the ice cream van, would he mind, I won't repeat my language, would he mind moving on? He's disturbing my meditation. And I went back to sit and I actually had a little bit of wisdom, not much, but a little bit to make me think, that can't be right. So for some of us, we so much love that peace, we're so good at meditating, that we need to just relax, twist this awareness, allow movement, allow what we might call disturbance, allow ourselves to feel, for the sake of exploration. For others of us, we're so able to be open and with the flow of things, we have no stability. We just flow all over the place, flow down the drain. So for some of us, our weakness is in the lack of being able to gather. So we might spend more of the retreat just continuing with the samatha, with the gathering, because that's helpful for us. There's no exactly one way of doing it. You must do 5 minutes of this, 5 minutes of that. So it's to find our own way to feel this balance and that gatheredness. Often it is helpful when we start a formal period of meditation to spend 5 or 10 minutes just gathering. And then to be more, allow the attention to be more open. What's present here? To notice, this heaviness in the gut. Allow our attention just to see there. What's, maybe there's a feeling to it. Maybe there's a sense of, subtle sense of self to it. Maybe there's a thought process. Maybe there's a accepting what's there. I don't like, suddenly we meditate, we're just agitated. And then we want to be peaceful, so we're not wanting the agitation, we're wanting the peacefulness. Already we've created a war zone. So then we just say, okay, it's like this. This is over and over again in our monastic life. Our teacher used the refrain to help us. It's a very helpful phrase to encourage this inquiry, the pasna. Just the phrase, this is how it is. This is how it is. I don't want it to be like this. It should be another way. You know how it should be. It's like this. So as soon as we find ourselves resisting, this is how it is. It's like this. And that becomes the food then for concentration.